My name is Andy. I help people and organizations connect to purpose and make a difference in the world. In these wild and uncertain times, this podcast is an invitation towards better futures, exploring the mystery, beauty, and complexity of life through conversations with an array of incredible people, all of them working at the edge of what's possible for humanity. This is a place for big dreams, bold creativity, and fierce hope. Welcome to the Wonder Dome. If you're inspired by this conversation and you'd like to see it reach more people, you can help by sharing it with friends and colleagues, subscribing, giving us a 5-star rating, and best of all, leaving a glowing review. If you'd like to go even further, consider becoming a member of my small but mighty community of monthly supporters. You'll help me keep the lights on and provide funding to a wide range of charitable causes. You can learn more at thewonderdomepodcast.com. My guest today is Paul Zonneveld. Close listeners of the Wonder Dome will see that this is another wonderful return guest. I had a chance to connect with Paul and his colleague Mika a couple of years ago now, and we dove deep into the concepts at the core of their book, Emergent, which is exploring systemic intelligence and how every system, whether naturally occurring or human-made, exhibits certain qualities and certain patterns that you can navigate once you bring them into your awareness. And in so doing, potentially unlock so much more creativity and possibility for that system, let's say for an organization or a team, than was otherwise available up until then. Today, Paul is coming back because as he enters into the phase of his life that he describes as early elderhood, which he draws from Bill Plotkin's model of sort of life stages. As he enters early elderhood, what does it mean for him to share his decades of experience with other practitioners, folks like me who are earlier in our journey of leadership development, consulting, training, who are ready to bring more systemic awareness and intelligence into our practice? And he's developed this really exciting year-plus-long experience that includes both virtual and in-person that you can learn more about towards the end of the show and we'll include in the show notes. But the program, in a way, is what I found really enlivening, in addition to that offering of how do I pay my wisdom forward, was this the sort of way in which the program is giving him structure and form to a life of well-earned wisdom and insight, and how, in a way, this podcast has done that for me, and my work at KONU has done that for me. And my wish for you is, you, if you listen to this, in particular, if you're a leadership development consultant, you're going to dig this conversation, and you'd also like the past one I did with Paul and Mika. But if you're a person who's navigating a life journey and sitting with the question of what does it mean to have a legacy, to leave a legacy, to articulate my wisdom in an organized way and share it with others, this conversation will also resonate with you. So I think of Paul as a mentor, as a friend, as a wise early elder, and I'm grateful to have more time with him. Let's get settled in and hear what Paul has for us. Hey, Paul. Welcome back to the Wonder Dome.
Thank you, Andy. And as I was thinking about this, I was just feeling a huge gratefulness for you to run this Wonder Dome and to invite me. So thank you very much.
Yeah, this project, this offering has been a real labor of love for me. And there's something really exciting and meaningful for me to see that it has a kind of life of its own, you know, that you and I have a relationship that has been sourced primarily from this space, but has opened doors for other conversations and connections, and it becomes a vehicle for us to gather again and keep sharing and keep connecting. And I feel really lucky that I get to have this space. So thanks for coming back with me.
Yeah, so I feel very lucky that you started this. So I'm really looking forward to our conversation today.
Yeah.
Thanks, Paul. I feel called to start with this exploration of the moment you find that you, Paul, in particular, are finding yourself in, which we've talked about a bit offline, and you shared a kind of way of thinking about it from the teacher and author Bill Plotkin. But I'd like, without saying more, I'd love to just hear you talk about just the moment that you're at in your life and how you're arriving into that and experiencing that.
Yeah, it's a very special moment, I must say. A lot of things have happened over the last year where I started to realize that I've been developing systemic intelligence a lot, and that I felt that it wasn't just for me anymore. And that I am in this phase which Bill Plotkin calls late adulthood slash moving into early elderhood, and which brings kind of like a notion to pass on what I have developed, the body of experience and knowledge for systemic intelligence. And it feels not as a losing something, giving it away and losing it, but yeah, it's almost, somebody said this morning in a conversation that, it's like bringing your child to school or letting your child go out of the house and still having that, but also letting it have more alive on its own and passing it on to a next generation of facilitators and coaches and leaders to make it their own and to improve it and adjust it to the changes in the time. And that feels, I had to get used to it, I must say. It started about 2 years ago in a conversation with Amy Fox and the CEO of Mobius Executive Leadership. And yeah, it planted a seed. And yeah, here I am talking to you about it. And but it's and I must say I picked up Bill Plotkin's book just before we started talking, and it is beautiful what he writes about what the task is of early elderhood. And it is all about caring for the soul of the more than human community. And I think that is very connected to the work that I do now and the way that I see it now. And yeah, so it's an interesting phase. Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that. How do you relate to that idea, caring for the soul of the more than human community? What does that mean for you in particular as these seeds that have been planted are starting to sprout in you?
Yeah, it's multiple directions, actually. It is, I'm working a lot with executives and senior managers and in really large corporations, and they have a lot of power that they are sometimes not even aware of, also outside of their own organization. So the more than human is partly for nature, our environmental health, understanding that we are part of the earth and not we are separate from the earth. And this is beautiful quote of one of my teachers, who says after every meditation, he invites you to say, "May this be to the benefit of all beings without any exception." And I think that is one part of the more than human. And then in the spiritual version of it, it also has a vertical aspect, which is more connected to, and it has many names. Some people call it the divine, some people call it God or nature or whatever works for them, universe. So it is a larger energetic, you could maybe even say. And it humbles me, and it makes me also sit more quietly in my chair. It makes me more reflective even.
Thanks for sharing that. There's a song, I wish I could remember the title of it and the precise lyrics, so I'll paraphrase a bit, but Peter Gabriel, who I guess is probably also in his early elderhood as an artist.
He might be, yeah.
Yeah, certainly in late adulthood, has just put out an album. He released each single of the album. He had a bright side mix and a dark side mix. So he had two versions of each song, and he would release them on the full moon and the new moon. So the full moon version was the bright side mix, and the new moon version was the dark side mix. And a new moon is literally, you can't see the moon in the sky because it's in shade from the earth. He has one song in particular where he talks about, he uses this metaphor of a frame, of a sort of photo or a picture of a frame, and the way in which he experiences his own journey as an adult moving to the edge of the frame. Well, children, the next generation, come into the center of the picture of the frame. And as a dad listening to that song for the first time, you know, I felt really touched by that metaphor. I also felt some loss around that. Like there's a, I don't know, have Bill's framework in front of me, but I'm not, you know, I'm somewhere in adulthood now. And I felt like, but no, like I want to be in the center still, you know, I could feel a little bit of resistance to this metaphor, but what I'm sitting with, and as I hear you talk, that really is nourishing for me, is this idea that like the frame is really, really important.
Yeah.
That even though our eyes go to the picture, we go towards what's the center, towards what's most obvious and visible, the frame is what holds it together. And I'm hearing you sort of talk about an in-framing of organizational work, of life, of our world, of our sense of identity and spirituality. Like there's something we need to hold us in these moments, and that's really, really essential work. That maybe someone in general can, like, you need someone who's further along in the journey to have access to that capacity to kind of hold the frame for whatever is kind of emerging in the center. I'm curious, how does that metaphor land with you? What does that bring up for you?
Wow, that's a beautiful metaphor. And my first thought was when you mentioned Peter Gabriel, who's made some beautiful music starting with Genesis and then starting on his own. And also, you know, he was also involved with Nelson Mandela and setting up the elders. So he's really a, but also what I noticed, one of the first things is that many artists have made their most beautiful work and impactful work when they were older. Like Leonard Cohen, just the one before he died, the last album is like so essential in every word that he sings. And there are many more of those examples. And the frame around, you know, energy needs a frame to move. Otherwise, it just disperses and it has no direction, and or it stays. Sometimes it helps to be a little bit further along the way to see the larger picture, and that sometimes certain circumstances, although even sometimes painful, there is another meaning behind it. And that makes life even more worth in seeing it. We also talked about a beautiful situation you have been in, and now have three beautiful daughters. And that was also a pivotal moment where you have to hold a different frame than you first intended.
Yes. Yeah.
And if you can hold a larger frame, and that definitely relates to the work I do, when I look at organizations as living systems, that's already a different frame than an organization is just a linear production unit. But looking at what is the frame that I'm holding gives me access to different solutions and different thoughts and different opinions than maybe a more narrow frame or a frame from top to bottom instead of left to right or right to left.
Yeah, I can sort of really, to bring that down into my own experience, I can really, part of what that metaphor invited me into and part of what I am feeling in our conversation right now is this, although there are parts of me that feel kind of a bit like, wow, I didn't totally know this is what I was signing up for, right? Like sometimes life, maybe always, if we're paying attention, life puts us where it puts us. And that's and the kind of parts of me that thought I was in control or thought I was the one steering the ship, I'm realizing that's often not the case, that there seem to be other things that are shaping. But I then have like a choice to make. You know, I can kick and scream and go, no, I don't, I still want to be in the center of the picture. But there's something deeply, deeply meaningful and resourcing for me when I go, exactly that. If my children were in the world and didn't have a frame of both love and protection, of both support and challenge, they, like the energy that is their life would get dispersed. They wouldn't develop and mature and grow into whatever little seed of potential is sitting in them. Something would grow, but it would be, you know, like a tree that sort of grows high up on the mountains. You know, it's like, it's in a way it's beautiful how resilient they are, but it's stunted. Its shape is kind of just pushed by the wind, and it kind of doesn't grow straight and upright into its full potential because the context is so harsh and demanding.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just really feel a sense of meaning around, like, if I can stay in the bigger frame, this holding frame, then I can locate myself in it too, as an individual who also needs to keep growing. But I can also keep anchored in like the journey that we're all on. That journey, like, so the framing helps me when I feel under-resourced or when I feel overwhelmed or when I feel frustrated or irritated. I'm like, right, this is the work right here. This is the work.
Yeah, that's beautiful what you're saying. It refers to when you do that, is that actually you're looking, you can look at it from at least two different ways. You can look at it from your own will. What do I want and how do I want it? And you can look at it, you, in the context of the larger system. And how the system sometimes, I call that whispers. Whispers in your ear or whispers in your mind certain thoughts or a different connotation of the situation or a different meaning. And that frame, that larger frame or that different frame might give you a different, not only a different view, but also a different nudge to take a different decision. And that is one of the benefits, I think, of looking at larger, looking a little bit further out than we normally are used to. So like your family is embedded in the system of your wife and your larger extended family and the lineage of many generations before you and of both of you. And when you start looking at what's happening in your family in that light, then sometimes you see that some patterns over time, over generations, start to repeat itself.
I was just with my mom on her birthday this week, and she shared, she's been putting together a family history timeline for her maternal side, because her paternal side, at least on the surface, appears to be very clear, like these two people married and had these kids and those kids had these kids, right? Which is one sort of clear telling. But on her mom's side, there's a lot more, some secrets there that she's trying to uncover. But one thing she shared with me was that, just to kind of underline the kind of mystery and the resonance of what you're saying, is that She was her mom lived for many years with like undiagnosed mental illness, and her dad died when she was five. So my grandfather died when my mom was five. And she shared that when she had me, she got just blindsided by postpartum anxiety, like really, really intense anxiety. And she was the same age as her dad when he died,
Wow.
that she got hit with this anxiety. And so she's just sitting with this wondering of like, is that a coincidence? Maybe. But there's also some energy from that loss that is in her, that's been in her since she was little, that somehow manifested under this new condition of now suddenly I have this little person that I have to protect. And I'm exactly the age as my dad when he died. So this like kind of this resonance across generations that I think I feel like we can just be totally, we can feel like we're caught in a storm if we can't see these wider frames. I can just feel totally, why am I feeling this right now? And we can downplay it. Oh, it's just biological. You're just a woman who just had a baby. This is normal. But it was like, no, this is like very intense. There's more than just biology here or something. So just want to share that as like feels really alive in my family system right now, these kind of inquiries into what's our bigger frame and how is that shaping us?
What is our and if we look at it, if your mom would just look at it as her own postpartum anxiety or however she wants to frame it, then she's alone in. And when she sees that larger picture, it somehow also holds her to be able to look at it easier. You know, when you have a larger cup, then more difficulties you can hold than when you have a very tiny little espresso cup. And you know, if you want to pour a lot of that in there and it needs to stay in, that's hard work. And it was interesting what you said about you know, being the same age as her father, your grandfather. You know, sometimes occasions or I know it definitely learned about that trauma has a date and a time that it reappears again. So sometimes it has a, you know, every I don't know, first week of January or every, and it's out of the blue, these kind of things. And especially when ages start to line up, like her father and herself, and then suddenly it's like, and then suddenly also death walks into the door. And then it becomes a completely different, like, oh, and I have all these responsibilities and can I be there for my son longer than my father was here for me? That's a beautiful example. It's very dear.
The way you've
Very
just
dear.
mirrored that back to me, I'm having like a really strong kind of whole body tingling right now as I just like, yeah. And the sort of risk I'm in touch with, and maybe this is a way we segue into part, you mentioned you're trying to pass stuff on. I'd love to like maybe help articulate that more fully, but the risk I'm in touch with is both one we've already named, like the isolation risk, the sense of I have to, how do I solve this? How do I carry this all by myself? What is this even? And now death has walked in the door, and it just feels so scary and lonely. So that's one risk I'm in touch with. But I'm also in touch with like there's a risk for all of the people around us. Like if my mom didn't share that with me, the way she just shared it with me, then my own experience as a dad also feels lonelier. But now I actually feel like I feel a new sense of kinship with my mom because we're exploring this territory together and creating a shared frame, a shared understanding, a shared way of meaning making that's bigger than both of us, but includes both of us. And so the risk also, if we can't see the bigger pictures, is other people are alone too. And we all have our own little frames that are all our little espresso cups that like, can't hold, none of them can hold it all. So I just like, I want to share that, and I'm curious how that connects more explicitly with what you see as the work of, like, the systemic work, the systemic intelligence work that
yeah.
you're that you want to help other people download.
You know, the systemic work in organizations where I mainly use it, and we just talked about it, it originates a little bit out of the family system way of looking, but it has an own body of development, an own body of knowledge and experience that we've now been building over 22 years. And if I look at organizations, very often people think that either they themselves alone need to solve something, or they are the cause of a problem, or their team needs to just in isolation solve something. And very often, especially the things they can't solve, or the things that are repetitive, that are coming back all the time, and it looks as if they have solved it, and then it comes back again in a comparable shape or form, or then very often it feels very lonely. But if you look at an organization as a living system, then you start looking at the interrelatedness and the interdependencies. And then I've helped a lot of teams, not by doing a lot or being very wise, but just by asking them to look one layer wider. For example, with all the other teams, for example, if we're talking about a team and then all the other teams that are connected to them in their interdependencies. And then when they started to look wider, suddenly they saw that either the cause was not just in their own team, but it might be in the interrelatedness with other teams. And the solution became easier than when they had to solve it alone. And very often these interrelatedness and dynamics and patterns that are being invoked by that are very invisible if you look at it from a more dissected way of looking. That this is this team separate from that team because it has a different manager. This department is that business unit is its own business unit, and very often, you know, business units still work in silos almost. But when you start looking at it as a whole, it becomes easier to carry the burden. It becomes a little bit different to solve it as well. So very often it is a little nudge at the right moment or the right inclination that will move more solution to the surface.
Maybe bring that to life a little bit more, this like some examples of nudges that you've seen that become possible when people widen the frame.
So recently I talked to a company that was started by a scientist, a very driven scientist. And there was, you know, you have this organizational branch and you have the scientific branch. And they were talking about how the collaboration was kind of like difficult between the scientific and the organizational branch. And so it was easy to say, well, yeah, maybe we're working in silos and we need to connect more at the top. But actually, when we started to look at it as a living system, they starting to see that some of the patterns of the person who founded the organization. And one of the patterns that this person has is very inspiring at the beginning and very hot about a certain topic and wants to have all the people to commune around it and start to work on it. And when people start to work on it, there's a new idea. There's a new inspiration with this person. And the person follows the new inspiration. And actually, then the organization is like, where is the inspiration going? And instead of saying we are not working together, it is more looking at what is in the founding energy of the organization that we need to give a little bit more time to, that we need to start looking at a little bit more so we can understand what is the undercurrent that is happening in this organization and that that it is a natural, this person almost creates a wave and then the wave passes on and there's a new wave. Well, when you know that there are waves coming, you can start surfing.
Yeah.
And you don't need to be afraid in the bottom of the wave that everything is falling apart and you don't know how to relate to each other anymore. So if you look at that in a larger picture, and then also sometimes it becomes a different metaphor. And then they started talking about this between the different departments and the different streams. And they started to find common ground. And there's a different vibe, you could call it, in that organization now.
Great example. Thank you for that. There's something about the surf wave surf metaphor that just so resonates and is so alive in me right now that I want to respond to. This story that I've carried for much of my life that I hear other people carry about how change happens is sort of like some version of the work of like, we need the water to go where it goes. So the work is to like change the wave somehow.
Yeah.
And you know, I don't want to over index on this metaphor because there are ways in which our behaviors produce waves. That's the story you've just shared of someone's behavior producing a certain kind of wave. And so you could see that a new behavior from that person could produce a different kind of wave. But like at a larger frame, the work is less to change the waves and more to see the waves more clearly and develop our capacity to ride them more skillfully. Like that's actually a big work. It sounds like that's a big outcome from this work here is maybe the waves change, maybe they don't, but everyone can start to see the waves more clearly and choose how they want to ride them if they can't
exactly
change.
Exactly. And this work is also the intention of the work of systemic intelligence is to help solve some stagnations in organizations to create a little bit more flow in the way that they can work together, in the way that they can move forward. And it's also to you know, one of the benefits that we start seeing is that everybody's is talking about busy, busy, busy. It's unbelievable how busy people are at the moment. And obviously part of that is because everything has become more complex and everything, so everything is more intertwined and interdependent. But what I also notice is that people have been trained in a very linear way of solving problems. And solving problems in through project management, through programs that have 10, 12 steps or 6 steps or 7 steps. But we think that if we have a goal, that we can follow almost a line and we get to the end of it. But that works only in a portion of the organizational work.
Small frame for that to work, you have to kind of narrow the frame in a way.
Exactly. And you have to start, you know, it's built on expertise and knowledge and skill. But it's also like you know, if you ask a carpenter to build a steel bridge that connects 3 different shores, and the only thing that the person has is a hammer, then it's going to be very difficult. And if you try to do that, you can maybe build something that survives it a little bit, but might not be high enough for the boats to go under. And so in more complex situations, you have to start using different ways of looking to find what is really happening in the interrelationship of the different stakeholders, of the different departments, of the different needs and even also with the outside world, like clients or policymakers. So you need a different way of seeing the reality, and you need a different way of solving it.
So I'm like, you know, clearly you're preaching to the choir here. Like I'm a convert in this philosophy of approach, and it's hard to do. It's really, as someone who's committed, like maybe I'm not saying it quite right, but as someone who's committed to this, to be in those different ways of looking requires a move. It requires a step. It requires some kind of shift that unless me and the people around me choose to make the shift, then it's easy to stay in the narrow frame, in the like project management stance. And I wonder if you could just say a bit more about what it actually, what are the new or different ways of looking, of inquiry, of seeing that you're, that you see this systemic intelligence as actually helping people with? What are the moves that they can make, and how do you help them make it?
Yeah, let's become a little practical. It's a good idea. So first thing, what is needed, and this might sound very controversial, we need to do it a little bit slower than we are doing it now. Because when we speed up, we miss a lot of the pointers that we get. We miss a lot of the little signals that are there to solve the issues. Because when we, the faster we go, and there's a beautiful exercise that everybody can do, is if you walk in a larger room and you walk forward and you just notice what's happening, that your focus starts to narrow a little bit and you're walking pretty fast in general. Then I ask people to walk backwards. And especially when there are more people in the room and without looking over your shoulder all the time. So not taking control all the time with your visual control. And you see that people already start to move slower. And still they don't bump into each other all the time. And then as a third version, I ask them to put their attention on their back and then walk forward. What to notice is two things. A, they walk slower, they feel their body more, and their vision is wider. They see more than when they just walk forward. So it's not slowing down in the sense of standing still all the time, but it's starting to open up your visor wider so that you can see more of the interdependencies, first of all. Because if you only stay looking at the little point on the paper and not noticing that there is a lot more on the desk, then how can you even relate it to each other?
Yeah.
The first thing is to start slowing down a little bit, taking a little bit of distance. Some people call it the balcony position, where you're not on the dance floor in the work itself, but you go to the balcony and you start getting an overview. But it's not just that. It's also asking yourself different questions. Asking yourself, what am I missing? Asking yourself, how is the maintaining of this situation, which is, seems not to be beneficial, what or who is it benefiting to not be solved, for example, or to not be moving forward? Who has the benefit, or who is benefiting from a program that is stalling, for example? So if you start asking larger and different questions, you start to see more. And especially the questions that we most of the time don't ask.
I love the invitation that I really want to underline, which is, with a few subtle shifts of attention. And sometimes that shift happens because of an intention. Walk backwards. Ooh, I'm intending to walk backwards. Boop, your attention has to shift. But also you can say, okay, now walk forwards, but keep your attention behind you. With these subtle shifts, we can access information that's already available to us, but we're just not attending to it.
Exactly.
Right? Like right now I'm looking at you on our video screen. Maybe someone's driving and they're looking at the road ahead of them. And good, keep your eyes open, please. But without taking your eyes off the road, you could actually increase your situational awareness and see that you can see the car right in front of you, but also the car that's 10 cars ahead. You can see both side view mirrors. You can see the rear view mirror, and it all without shifting anything other than widening your attention.
Exactly. Exactly.
So that's,
and it's
really
a beautiful
powerful
example that you give, because you know that one part is peripheral vision, like what we always use when we drive, hopefully, that makes us drive safely. And what also happens when you start paying attention to what's behind you, it opens your senses differently. And I have no clue why that happens, but it happens. And so it slows down your thinking a little bit, so other thoughts can come in. So there is a whole shift in the way that you lead or the way that you look at something. And if you then, when things are very complex, one way of looking more at the system, getting more out of the system, is to ask a couple of people who are connected to the problem to come and sit with you. Most of the time we call it a meeting, but not a meeting to solve something, but a meeting to gather different views. Because what a meeting for different views do is that you get much more information than only from one view, even if you are on the balcony. Because you are on one side of the room of the balcony and somebody else might be on another side of the room of the balcony and seeing something that was hidden for you. And starting to gather that information and then to start making sense of it, still not to solve it immediately, but to start looking, what are the dynamics? What are the patterns that start to emerge in this conversation? And what are we maybe even falling into? Sometimes the dynamic that is connected to the problem starts to also show up in the people when they are talking about it. But to start to gather all that information and then find the pattern and then not solve the behavior, but solve the pattern. And do something simple that can just shift the pattern. And when the pattern shifts, which is kind of like what I call the undercurrent, then everything on the surface, on the part that what is visible, the behavior of the people, starts to move, starts to shift.
That's so cool. Thank you for sharing that. I feel really alive to the potential of this way of gathering people and orienting people and helping them see what on some level they're already seeing, they just haven't noticed it yet.
Yeah. And they might have missed things. And you know, you can just imagine, you also come sometimes in organizations and you see how many people are sometimes rushing from meeting to meeting, or when they're online, back-to-back meetings. And most of the meetings have an agenda to solve something. But leaders who want to start using this as well, you can't go in with the same energy of a meeting where you solve things, where you are really moving forward and start to get information. Okay, how do we do this? Well, who's doing what? And dividing the tasks. The meeting I described previously about gathering information is more laid back, sit back, feel your back meeting, where you don't have to decide on something yet. Because when you gather all that information and then you sleep on it, you could call it, or let it sink in a little bit, then suddenly the patterns start to show itself in you, or you start to notice it yourself. So leaders have to become aware that sometimes we just need this, let's get it done and solve it attitude in a meeting. And sometimes they need a more laid back meeting. But that means they need to shift something in themselves.
I love, by the way, that like laid back, at least here in the States, it actually kind of connotes the surfer energy in a way, like, oh, he's too laid back, he's too relaxed. But like, there's this like intentional to literally lay back, to attend back, that is really essential as a balance to the lean forward energy that we tend to default to.
And you open up something for me as well. You talked about the timeline that your mother was creating of her maternal lineage. Organizations, as they are living systems, also have a timeline. And it starts with the founder. You know, organizations are different beasts than families. With families, kind of like in general, they continue over centuries. And sometimes we don't know, but it's, you know, it's a forward movement always. Organizations just at a certain moment start by the founder. It's a different energy. But it also has a timeline. So sometime by gathering that information and asking the question, what does this resemble like? What we are now starting to see? And did anything like this happen before in this organization? And then when you start looking back, you sometimes might see that there was an event in the earlier years of the organization that was maybe painful or hurtful, or, you know, the press wasn't really positive about, or there was a lot of loss and a lot of people had to be had to resign, and that wasn't really integrated in the organization, and it still shows a couple of years later. It can still show its results, or still the contractions or the stagnation. So that is also looking larger, looking in a wider frame, not only around you as the team or as the person or as the department, but also call it vertically backwards. So you can look in different dimensions the solution when something doesn't seem to respond to the solutions you've tried before.
So that's a signal. If you've tried something, especially if you've tried it more than once and there isn't a response, the move is not to just try and generate a new solution or do the solution you're doing harder or more intensely. The move that you're really advocating for is to pause, widen, deepen, lay back, and gather more information about what might be producing this problem.
Exactly. Right? Most of the time, it is a more entangled, complex problem. You know, it's the same one when you go to a foreign country and you don't speak the language and you try to speak to the person in English and they don't understand you. Speaking English louder doesn't help.
Oh, that's great.
But we have that inclination.
It's a very natural. Oh, they're just not understanding me. Let me slow down and increase my volume and then they'll get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And articulate a little bit better, as if they then suddenly speak English.
Yeah. Okay. I'm conscious of time. This has been really fun. To make this really clear, like, you are at a place in your life as in late adulthood, early elderhood, where you've realized that it's time to pass on these teachings to other practitioners.
Yeah.
Maybe in particular practitioners like me who are earlier in their journey of practice, and you have a program coming up called the Full Download, is that right?
That's true. Yeah, I created a program which actually, it was an idea that started 2 years ago. And as I was, first I celebrated my 20 years of independence as an independent contractor and associate with Mobi as executive leadership for 13 years. And then suddenly it came to me like, well, when am I going to pass this on? So it has been percolating for 2 years. It is a program that I created. It's called the Full Download, in which I'm going to download everything I know. And I'm going to transfer and teach. And it's very pragmatic and embodied, where we have been sometimes been talking also conceptual. But the program is very pragmatic and embodied. And just by chance, it is 22 teaching days. I didn't know how I got there, but I had like six main modules that I found that is the real transfer. And some modules have 3 days and others have four. And then when I added them up, there were also 22 training days next to 22 years of preparation. So one day a year.
Wow.
And it starts in September. And it takes 15 months to, well, actually 18 months to do it. So we have a module, and then we have 3 months of integration and online intervision. And then we do another module. And then every 3 months we meet again in person in Amsterdam. And I must say, there's already some traction on the program, which is really nice. And we have people from both Europe, from Asia as well. Already somebody from the UK, from the US, already from the UK one. Mm. And I'm really, yeah, the message really is how to pass it on to the next, what I call the next generation. So yeah, people end of 30s, early 40s maybe, which for me is my next generation. You know, many have them already done some personal work and would like to now see how can I integrate that in a process that I can use in organizations when you're an advisor or an organizational coach or also leaders that want to up their game and be ready in this more complex time, because the need is there as well.
Yeah. So exciting. And I sense, just as a data point, even you, when you shared the example of the walking and you said, pay more attention to my back, I suddenly had, like, since you've said that, this whole conversation, I've had more awareness in my back. And, you know, we'll see if that has that shifted anything in the conversation, or does something open up later? Who knows? But like, I sense that that's an example of the kind of what you mean when you say, like, let's really bring it into your body. Let's bring these concepts down into practice. And it sounds like you'll be doing that with a really diverse group of practitioners with each other, helping them bring that down into their bodies and into their practice. Is that right?
And it's wide in the sense that A, it's very practical, and B, there is also a spiritual component to it, or an energetic component, in which I'm also going to invite to step into, become that, because then that being aware of your back and opening all your senses is becoming even easier.
Mm.
So and then it becomes more of a way of living, almost, you could say. Aesthetic intelligence could become a way of living.
Yeah. We'll include the stuff in the show notes, but if someone's listening and they want to go check out more about your work or about this program, where should they check that out?
There's two websites they can go to. The first one is for the program, which is thefulldownload.org. Or they come to my personal website, which is paulzonneveld.nl.
Mm.
And that's where a lot of information is. And it even also relates to another website, The Power of Systemic Intelligence, which also shows some of the other programs. But for the full download, it has its own dedicated website, which also will be a free webinar on April 25th, which we'll announce there as well soon. So yeah, it's a whole place to come to.
Mm. Well, thank you, Paul. And thanks for everyone who's listening. Here's to a more embodied, laid back way of being when we need it, especially in these really intense times where we're all pushing without slowing down to see what's going on. So thank you for your commitment to that over the decades, over 22 years, and to distilling that down into 22 days of teaching. It's really exciting.
Well, thanks very much for having me. And then, like I said in the beginning, I'm very grateful for that. And I loved our conversation again. It did go where I didn't think it would. That's wonderful.
That's a feature, not a bug of the Wonder Dome. I'm so glad to hear it. Okay, lovely. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for tuning into the Wonder Dome. This podcast was produced by me, Andy Cahill, with support from Kaylee Sirkwa, and post-production by Jim Sirkwa of Sump Pump Studios. The Wonder Dome is recorded and produced primarily on unceded Nipmuc territory. I honor their ongoing leadership and stewardship of the land. I trace my own ancestral roots to Celtic peoples from Ireland and Scotland, and to Anglo and Germanic tribes across northwestern Europe. We all come from somewhere, we're all going somewhere. May the wisdom of our ancestors guide us, and may we find our own wisdom along the way. The theme song was written and performed by Todd Marston. You can find the Wonder Dome wherever pods are casted. If you dig what we're doing here, please share widely, subscribe, and give us some love on the review boards. If you feel called to support this humble offering while making an even greater impact in the lives of others, consider becoming a monthly supporter. You can find out more at my website, thewonderdomepodcast.com. Until then, I'm wishing you a life of purpose, power, and presence. We need you now, more than ever.